Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, I don't know if you saw him. Did you see the trophy, the Vulcan? The Birmingham Bowl trophy? It's awesome. I don't know if you saw Dana's tweet. He had it on the plane. I took a picture with it. It's a little troublesome, but he has like this. He's got no pants on. He's got like an apron on.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh didn't have pants either.
Yeah, no.
So did Donald Duck.
And Winnie the Pooh is a kid's show.
But this is a
and
man.
This bear has no pants.
Picture of a man with a beard, and so I prefer pants on. I don't know.
Did they?
But he had like
give him an ad. Did they give him?
He had like an. He got like an apron on, and then there's a brown stain around the
who
pubic area. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. Yes, you didn't.
What?
Have you seen
it's
this?
The symbol of Birmingham.
I didn't look closely at the quote unquote pubic area.
Well, people have.
Hey, what
and
is
they
that?
Commented on it. It's like I don't know what the deal
was. It
is
like
with,
that
with
before
him.
Houston
yes,
got it.
Yes.
Okay.
No. They didn't do that to
I
him.
Make sure.
Although he is making the rounds. We took him.
How heavy
we
is
took
it?
Him to play. He's heavy.
It is.
It's so big. It's about
what I'm saying.
3.5 feet big, tall. Three feet tall. It's a statue. Well, because of his spear or whatever he's holding up.
Yeah.
But we took him to play golf. We took him to Damaris. We had a good time with him.
He dummies.
Was, yeah. What? And people
you took him
everywhere
to play golf.
We went. Everybody wanted to take pictures with him.
Well, sure.
And it's awesome. I learned too that, and I know your aunt know all these bowl games. Here's what I think. Why do you care how many bowl games there are? Then don't watch them.
I think it's part. I think partially it's really starting to hurt. It's really cheap in the bowl. Like bowls mean nothing.
No,
anymore.
Yes, they do.
A 6-win team gets a bowl.
I couldn't disagree more. Because
is that why everyone's opting out?
No, not everyone is opting out.
It's a
lot of guys. I don't know if you heard, but a lot of guys played.
But a record
a
number.
A lot of guys.
It's
played.
A new record again this year. We'll continue to set records.
What? Of what was the record? Versus the number of guys that played.
No, it's a new
it's
record across.
It's not even close. Not even close. So those guys want to go and they want to get ready for the draft. That's fine. Go get ready for the draft. That's fine. You know what?
I am not
going to tell a kid what to do. I know Herb Street. There was a big stink over Herb Street saying kids don't love football. He had to actually back that up.
He kind of did.
No, he said, "Hey, he made a generalized statement about kids, and he's wrong."
But I do feel like they don't. There's not as much love for the game.
How is that possible with all of the kids that played in those games?
Because there's a lot.
There's
who don't
thousands
anymore.
Of kids that played. I mean, what are we talking about?
Well,
here?
What is there? Why would they not play if they're not going to go to the draft? Thousands of kids aren't going to the draft.
That's right.
Either.
So what,
only 250 are going to be drafted.
The 20 kids that opted out. Is
no,
that what we're worried
way
about?
More than 20 opted out.
How many
out?
Opted out?
Oh, it was in the I think 68 range, 70 range.
Was it really?
Oh yeah, we had five
and thousands played.
We had five or six. We had in one game the not Ole Miss because nobody did for Ole Miss. Nobody opted out, including Drummond and Matt Corral.
Sugar Bowl. Yeah, you want to play for your team.
Penn State had eight.
I don't care
if
there's 200 opt outs. I don't care. You know what? The kids that are playing, and they want to be in part of
but
that.
But do you remember when bowls used to matter?
Yeah, yes, and they still matter.
Well,
because I saw a team go to the Birmingham Bowl, beat a 6-6 Auburn team, and it couldn't have been a better experience and better for that program. And you know what? It's the Birmingham Bowl,
yeah,
which is brand new.
It was great for Houston.
And it's awesome. That's
I don't
right.
think Auburn probably loved it. They're used to playing in bigger
Auburn
bowls.
Tough toenails.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. I do think that, but Houston also had a lot of wins. Let me make sure that we are clear about this. There are too many bowls. bad teams are given participation trophies in bowls where nobody goes to them. They don't sell tickets, and the TV rights are going to basically dry up on them because no one's watching.
They just keep adding them.
Because no one's watching them.
And you know what? They keep adding them.
Group of five.
And oh, by the way, and again, it's so nobody goes and you don't want to watch it. Then don't watch it. Those kids get an experience that they ordinarily
there's
wouldn't.
There's no reason. There's no reason to. Yeah, there's
no, those kids
people
will,
aren't
those
watching.
Kids have a good experience and they want to do it.
But
why do you care?
Well, then give it to four win teams
why
too, because then
care?
We can get more experiences.
Okay, then, we'll have four win bowls. That's fine.
This is so lame. Like this is the participation trophy incarnate right here. Like here you get a bowl and you get
no,
a bowl.
No, let's make sure that Lance doesn't watch. Let's make sure that Lance is happy with his
playing. No, that's not what
playing.
It is. Why? Then you can't make an argument about this society with their participation trophies.
I'm not making an argument.
But, John, it's a money grab.
And oh, by the way, it's not a participation
it's
trophy.
Not for a 6-16?
If Lance, if economics didn't handle it, they wouldn't be adding bowls right now. They would just say, okay, when it dries up, then you know what? The economy will tell us. But until then, why do you care? What
here's,
do you
here's
care?
Why I care, because across the landscape, it's now made all the games less meaningless.
No, that's not true.
No, you're not letting me finish. It's all the bowl games have made bowl games are less much less when we had like 12 bowl games or just New Year's Day bowl games. This is a simple it's like the I'll use UFC. UFC when there was one fight a month or one fight every 2 months, oh my God. Now there's a fight every it's completely you're inundated with it.
You're
so you don't care as much.
Okay.
But I think the combination of bowls, excessive bowls, the opt out philosophy now, and I'm talking about not for guys like Kenny Pickett and Matt Corral, or I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about fourth rounders, fifth rounders. And then I think the playoffs, the 14 playoffs, has really made a lot of these games like not all and not all teams, but you can definitely tell there's a vibe of if they really mattered, Penn State would not have had 8 opt-outs in the Penn State game versus Penn State played. I had the other side.
Arkansas. Right?
Arkansas. Yeah, they played Arkansas, and Penn State I think had 8 opt-outs. Arkansas had 4, but that's a game like wow, Big Ten SEC. That should really. I don't even know what was that bowl. You used to go by.
It was
now it's called like Capital One, but it used to be.
Yeah.
Okay,
it was
the bowl game.
Or whatever bowl it was.
Yeah, right. But, yeah. Now you don't even know the names of the bowls anymore.
I don't care. I saw Penn State playing against on New Year's
but
Day.
But not really.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I watched
them. No, you didn't have Jahan Dotson.
Yes, I did. I watched them.
You watched them.
Not really? Yeah, I watched them.
You watched them. You didn't see the best players.
I don't care. I don't care.
But I know you don't care.
Well,
but people,
why do you? You don't want to watch it. To watch it.
You can gamble on it. Like it's kind of like a preseason game.
If
you're basically
you don't
bowl games. Are,
watch it. Don't watch.
Bowl
it.
Games are basically preseason games. Now.
That's all.
Yeah, they're exhibitions.
Yeah,
they always were exhibitions.
No, they were a big deal.
What do you mean they were exhibitions?
Bowl games were big
always
deals across the board.
Always have been.
They're big. They used to be big deals across the board. They're not big deals anymore because we're waiting for the playoffs. And I get it. And maybe expanding the playoffs would help keep more of the top players in and help make more of the teams more like excited. You know, it would. As a matter of fact, there is no doubt about it. Expanding playoffs, which I don't know is a good thing because I don't think there's enough good teams. And I think Cincinnati proved that. And Group of Five, by the way, that's a separate conversation. They'll never get another shot now, unfortunately. Like, that's done. Cincinnati looks so overmatched against, frankly, not one of the best Alabama teams. And did you see on the field?
Is Notre Dame out because they got overmatched by Alabama?
No, because Notre Dame is given gifts all the time because they're Notre Dame. Cincinnati doesn't have that same cachet as in the same history as Notre Dame.
Yeah,
what was weird?
You mean 0 for their last 10 major bowls?
Oh, don't look at me for. I don't think Notre Dame should be given anything.
Notre
personally.
Dame should be given nothing.
They shouldn't be given
they
anything.
They suck.
But you know the difference is when you watched. You watched the game, obviously, yeah. Cincinnati and Alabama. Once you see it, the difference in the size of the players.
That's absolutely not true. That's absolutely not true.
You didn't think that Bama's front looked way bigger than
Cincinnati's
front?
Cincinnati was huge.
The Cincinnati front on offense and defense, yes. You thought it looked like Alabama's?
It was. They're almost the same. Yes, go look it.
Then I tell you what, then they're built differently because, I will say this. I don't know about the weight on Cincinnati because there's some kind of top-heavy guys. The body types.
Well,
for Alabama, yeah, substantially
48,
better.
48, 31, just monster. And, oh, yeah, by the way, and well,
I mean, they're Georgia, 4 and 5 stars.
Listen, but wait a minute. It's the same. Because Cincinnati got blown out, they're done. Forget it.
It is.
Notre Dame got blown out,
took,
too.
A group of five is done.
Oklahoma's got you blown think, out.
Look Michigan what it State took to get group out. Of five in, and then they just didn't show up in well, this bowl game.
They didn't show
game.
Up. They got beat by a great team. What are you talking about? By the number one team.
They got beat by the number one team. You think that that's not going to hurt the next time that there's – come on. You know it's going to hurt.
First of all, expand the playoffs, and then you don't – there's not this argument. Give them more of a chance than one time. Are you kidding? Because they had one chance? Really? Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
No,
that's ridiculous.
But it can be ridiculous.
Notre Dame gets and, wait.
John, I'm saying
Georgia's
something that's 100%.
Out. Oklahoma's been blown
Hold
out.
Hold on. You don't think I'm right?
Ohio State's been blown out.
You think the selection – I'm not saying all that that didn't happen. Do you think I'm right, though?
What?
I know I'm right. Cincinnati now
no,
because –
No, because the playoffs will expand and they will get a chance.
That's the only chance they have because – the selection committee will never give another this is an undefeated group of five
okay,
team.
Then you know what?
That played well
then
when they needed to.
The selection committee eliminate Notre Dame as well because they're 0-10 in their last big
I'm good
bowls.
For closing Notre Dame
completely.
I'm good for closing them completely down as a whole school.
I'm done.
I mean, Oklahoma's 0-4. They've never won. They've been there four times. They've never gotten past the first round.
Now, are they competitive? They've been blown out before?
Notre Dame and Oklahoma play a little better schedules than Cincinnati. Let's not go crazy. That's the argument against Cincinnati.
Of course they do. But just because you got blown out in the bowl game, you can't eliminate it.
That's what the selection committee will do. They'll say, see, we gave a group of five a team. They're going to say it publicly. But you know privately, we all know how that works.
Do the same to Notre Dame. Do the same thing to Notre Dame.
Why are you so anti-Notre Dame?
Because they've been blown out.
I don't want to see Notre Dame. Trust me. I don't want them to just give Notre Dame. I do know that Ohio State is a better team than Cincinnati.
Ohio, yes.
I mean, they were a better team. And it's supposed to be about the four best teams. But they gave Cincinnati
They got their ass
right?
handed.
Okay. No doubt.
Is Michigan out too? Because they got their ass handed.
Michigan got beat by a phenomenal defensive front. Like, they were overmatched. What this was, Chris Solis texts me, he goes, that ain't Wisconsin in the red. Like, well, you ain't lying about that. That felt like an old school, hey, Big Ten, we just want to remind you how much faster and better the athletes are in the SEC.
Oh, my God, all the SEC haters when the SEC was 0-4.
I know. They were all like,
it just means more. It just means more.
Well,
the
SEC sucked in the bowls.
Oh, guess what? And they got the two national championships.
And Snacks, I almost started yelling at Snacks. Snacks said, this sucks. No one wants to watch Alabama and Georgia. No one wants to see this. I said, what do you want? You want to see Cincinnati and Michigan Snacks? Yes. I said, why do you want to see two teams that looks like that getting their ass kicked playing a championship game? Because no one wants to see Alabama, and no one cares about the SEC anymore. I said, oh, so you don't care about the best teams in college football playing each other? You'd rather see teams who get blown out? Yes. I said, then you're a loser. And I walked out of the room. And I went, all right, I shouldn't have. Well, probably should have handled that better, but he got me
as
all
a
riled
parent,
up.
No, I like. Listen, there's no better parenting than when you call your kid a loser.
Well, then don't say loser stuff.
All right.
Here's you don't want to be called a loser. Don't say loser stuff. Say it like, I would rather see Michigan and Cincinnati in the national championship game after what you just watched.
Yeah.
You would? Yes. You said yes?
No.
Yes. Get out of my house.
I can't wait to see.
Get out of my house
Georgia,
while it's 84
Alabama
degrees and you can survive.
It's
going to be really good. I can't wait to see this. It's the same thing. Georgia's defense, I don't know how Georgia's defense got waylaid by. Well, here's how. They beat them through the air.
Yeah.
And see, Michigan can't beat you through the air.
Did you see, I mean, Bill O'Brien, for all Bill O'Brien, you can talk about Bill O'Brien, the GM. Bill O'Brien, the coach, is pretty good. You know what he did against Cincinnati?
Stop.
They didn't throw a pass until like midway through.
Probably Nick Saban told him.
Till the end of the first quarter.
You're going to stop with all this nonsense, right? We're going to run the ball.
Or Bill O'Brien said, you know what we can do? We can gash them. And you know what they did?
Play bully ball.
Yeah, they did.
Brian Robinson just played bully ball.
813 ESPN 97.5.
Little guys can't hold up against big guys.
Listen, I can't be more perfect for Coors Light. Is there a better spokesman for Bayou City Foot and Ankle than you? Is there anyone that should be is more branded for this sponsorship?
You're gonna love this. So Dr. Nuruddin played football at Baylor too. He was tweeting about the Baylor game, Baylor and Ole Miss. But this is literally perfect. And he was the guy I was corresponding with after I got hurt on Twitter, as a matter of fact. If you have chronic foot or ankle pain, the first step is getting a hold of Dr. Latif Nuruddin. If your first...
Did you say the first step?
The first step. Oh. Well, if your first step... Hey, and I had this too. Plantar fasciitis is horrible. It lasts forever unless you get it looked at. If that first step out of your bed is very painful in your heel area, that's going to be plantar fasciitis. If you're suffering from that, Dr. Latif Nuruddin is dedicated to getting you back on your feet. This is a guy who played college athletics. He knows what it's like to be able to perform or just be healthy, have healthy feet and ankles. I'm headed in there to get my ankle rechecked up on. Running and sports injuries, heel pain, foot and ankle injuries, children's foot care, bunions, hammer toes, diabetic foot care, skin and nail problems, shoes and footwear. He does all of it. And if you're diabetic, it's important to get your feet looked at every 3 months. Houston's own Dr. Latif Nuruddin and the doctors at Bayou City Foot and Ankle are dedicated to diabetic foot care as well. So make sure you go see Dr. Latif at Bayou City Foot and Ankle. Give them a call today, 281-500-8891. Trust me more than anybody about your foot and ankle issues. It's 281-500-8891.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
I think I need help. I'm drowning in myself.
You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, it's 819 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776. If you've got thoughts on the college bowl season, you're more than welcome to get in here and talk about that. We obviously, we have our passionate takes on it. I say play. Lance says, let's cut it back. I want to play.
Well, you want to play or you want players? Do you want players to play?
There are 80. I don't care if they play or don't. That's their decision.
So have games,
I am
don't
not
play.
To tell a player what he should do with his future. I don't, you know what? If you opt out and that's what you want to do, and a lot of guys who opt out made a mistake. That's okay. And a lot of guys who didn't, who opted out did the best thing for themselves.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I'm caring less.
There were 44 bowls this year, I'm going to say. Or there will be.
Yeah. No way.
They added bowls this year.
44 bowls?
42 bowls. 42 bowls for 84 teams that were 6-6 or better.
Well, and then you had a lot that were canceled.
84 times 100 kids on each, 84 teams, 100 kids on each team or in that neighborhood, let's just say, that's 8,400, and 60 opted out, oh well, 70 opted out, oh well. There were 8,400 kids that actually got to play in bowl games, get to do the week, get to practice, all got better because they practiced, got their swag from the schools, got to travel, got to experience bowl weeks at places. That's awesome. And you know what? 42 of them win and have and leave the season going, wow, we finished the season on a high. Look at that. Now we carry that into the next season. So I don't care if kids opt out. That's their decisions. I'm not going to talk about their money. That's their money. That's just fine and good. You know what I know is, if you don't like it, don't watch. If you do like it, watch. And you know, the economics of it, if you're right, there's probably a lot. Their schools are losing some money. ESPN's got to be losing money with no viewers. All of that stuff.
Well, the people who make money are the people who make the bowls.
As soon as those they say this is economically no longer feasible, that's when it'll disappear. That's, you know what?
Well, I mean,
when people stop making money,
why would you not create a bowl if you can get a brand sponsor, you make money, and then like it'll be gone and the next one will come up, and it's just a hustle. I mean, bowls are just a hustle now. It is what it is. I mean, you got to call for what it is. It's a hustle. It's a short-term money hustle for people who create the bowls. They want to make the money. They install themselves. They get salaried. It's a hustle. It's what it is. So you have to understand that's what college football has turned into, basically a hustle across the board. But I do think that it has cheapened bowls from when we were doing the show previously, like even 10, 15 years ago. It started with not opt-outs or anything. It started with sponsorships. And then it became less about the bowl, and it was a sponsor. And you forget what the bowl's name are. I don't even know the names of the bowls anymore. When we were coming up, it was mean the Gator Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. It was New Year's Day bowls really, really mattered. They don't really matter to people as much anymore. It's not must-see football by any stretch, especially not if the best players aren't playing. If you had a scenario where fewer teams, I would be in favor as a football fan of fewer teams but more games that mattered. And if you did expand the playoffs, obviously that would be the case. You would obviously, I mean, that's certainly the strongest argument for that. 8 is probably the best case scenario for trying to keep it as relatively close to having good football teams as possible. But if you expanded to a larger group of teams, then more of those games matter. Now, the question would become, if players start opting out of those games in expanded playoff scenarios, then you really shouldn't expand a playoff scenario. You should really tighten it back up because you're trying to get the best teams available in there. And there's some other discussions about, well, if a team has key players opt out, the selection committee should be able to replace a team with another team that has a better chance to win. Like, you shouldn't be – that's a whole separate –
Yeah, you're off on a tangent here.
That's a whole separate thing that you'll have to deal with at some point.
There would have been a lot of great college football playoff games this year. We saw the brackets. It would have been fun to watch. Hey, was there a more fun game than Oklahoma State and Notre Dame was great, but Utah-Ohio State?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a playoff game, by the way. That would have been awesome. That would have been awesome.
That was some of the worst football I've seen Ohio State play in probably 20 years. In the first half.
Defensively
in the first half. It was some of the best offensive football I've seen by Smith and Jigba and Marvin Harrison Jr. I was like, oh my God. And my brother immediately put on Twitter, he goes, you better tread lightly when you write up Marvin Harrison Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. Everything I want to say is elite with that kid. I'm not messing with dad.
Let's get Gary in here.
How about the receivers that Garrett Wilson, Olave, Marvin Harrison Jr., Smith and Jigba might be the best of all of them.
Holy crap.
Look at those four receivers. Oh, my, that's like Alabama's receivers.
And Smith and Jigba would have been even more had he not gotten the ball poked away from him going into the end zone.
How do you not score at the 12 seconds? To this day, I'm so pissed about that. That hurt me in about 3 different ways. Just push it into the end zone. Get the 7. What are you waiting for the 3? Where's the analytics guys there?
Yeah. No.
Where's Zach Taylor for the trying to get me in the end zone?
That's so funny. Gary,
I needed a touchdown there too with the Bengals. I needed them to score and let Kansas City go down and score.
What up, Gary?
Hey guys, sorry to change the subject.
Gary, you there?
Got into a heated debate. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what you want to talk about, Gary?
Hey, got into a heated debate with my buddies this weekend over quarterbacks, and sorry to change the subject. But, Lance, in your opinion, I feel like every time a quarterback fails or busts out, somebody says because it's the O-line, he doesn't have enough weapons, it's the organization he's in, or et cetera, instead of sometimes quarterbacks just aren't good. The discussion was about Trevor Lawrence. By no means am I saying Trevor Lawrence is a bust. I'm just saying he hasn't looked very good so far this season, even outside of the fact that, you know, he's not in the best situation.
Mm-hmm.
But in your opinion, do most quarterbacks, well, I guess what I'm saying, if you're actually good, let's say Joe Burrow, he's a good quarterback. The Bengals do not have a good O-line. They do have weapons. The organization is out historically, but he came in and he's a good player because he's good. I feel like QBs get like way too many excuses when the fact of the matter is, if you're good, you'll be good. Obviously, going to a great organization will help.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like QBs always get excuses, O-line, organization, weapons. Well, some of these guys just suck. And so that was kind of my point.
Yeah, I think that happens. I think what's happened now is even football's become polarized where people put their capes on for different quarterbacks and you just can't, like, you just don't have, 2 things have happened. Number one, people become very protective of quarterbacks or very aggressive about other quarterbacks to show that they're bad. And it's become, and you already recognize it's more agenda driven than anything. First and foremost, quarterbacks need, sometimes you can tell after 2 years, but really quarterbacks do need 3 years to transition from some of them. From college to pro, because the fact is Joe Burrow stepped into a situation with Joe Mixon. They did get the offensive line better this year. Last year it was bad.
They were the worst team.
His first
in
year
football.
Was a bad offensive line.
No. 2 years ago, they were the number picking first overall, 2 years later, they're the division champs.
Right, but he did step into a situation with he came in with T. Higgins. They had Tyler Boyd. He had A.J. Green. He had Joe Mixon. He had C.J. Uzuma. Like, he had a little bit more from a weapon standpoint, but not offensive line. Now, he's got an abundance of weapons, but Joe Burrow's just playing good football.
No.
Like, he didn't. There's no excuses. Trevor Lawrence is not playing good football. He also does not have a great running game. His wide receivers have been hurt, and his offensive line hasn't been good, and it's a bad situation. Both are true. Trevor's also not playing well, and those things are true. But I also think, did you see Bill Belichick's comments about Trevor Lawrence this week? He thinks he's got a chance to be a great quarterback, but I don't think he just says that randomly. He's not Lou Holtz.
He was up 50-3 on him.
Right, but he's not Lou Holtz. I think he understands that's a really bad situation. He's not, this is boy, Jacksonville's an awfully good team. It's a great. He's saying Trevor's has a chance to be great because I think Bill Belichick doesn't just. When have you seen Bill Belichick just throw platitudes out willy nilly? It doesn't happen very often. I think Trevor Lawrence has a chance to be really good, but he's not playing good football right now, and there's no excuses. Justin Fields has sucked. Zach Wilson, for the most part, has sucked. But they don't. But there are situations where it's not optimal for them. They're going to teams.
No, Mac Jones is in the optimal
situation. Mac Jones is in the optimal situation. And Davis Mills is in an optimal situation here. So
yeah, nothing says a great situation like the
Texans. I'm with you that people make excuses too much, but I also don't think you should be going in with long-form arguments for rookies. That's just not fair to the rookies. No. It really isn't. No. Like, the college game has never been less indicative of the pro game than right now. The college game is like you're watching. When I watch tape on, I'm watching tape on Matt Corral. I'm like, it's not going to look like this at all.
No, it's a video game.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. When we come back, Roosh Williams is going to join us to talk about this Rocket situation. We will do that on the other side. It's a big deal. If you haven't heard us talking about that, we started the show with it. We'll get back to the Rockets and what's going on there. But first, I want to talk, and you know what? We're talking about hoops, right? Well, let's talk about hoops, sporting goals, and equipment, and it's the best. It's just there's no question in my mind that if you get the hoops goal, you got the best goal on the market. And listen, it's not arguable. It's just not because it is – tempered glass backboard, unrustable stanchion. The goal lowers and raises. The rim is a breakaway rim, which means it doesn't break, which means the kids can hang on it all day, which means when you go to the website, produnkhoops.com, you'll see, you know what the kids are all doing? They're hanging on the rim, Dad. You know what? They're dunking. That's all of the pictures when you see it. They're not taking threes. You know what? Little kids, now they can take threes on the hoop goal because you can lower it where they can actually reach it. But what they want to do, Dad, is they want to dunk. They love to dunk. They want to be big boys and big girls. But you know what? They can't do it on a 10-foot goal. Get the goal that the kids want, that they'll actually play, that they'll actually have fun with. And that's the Pro Dunk Hoops goal. ProDunkHoops.com. Tell Keith Tate you heard it right here. ProDunkHoops.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Patrolling the Houston sports radio scene for 20 years. Well, minus a few years where Lance took a little detour. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Roosh Williams is joining us right now. Big, I think one of the most significant stories over the break, along with the development of Davis Mills, was the Rocket situation and KPJ leaving the team at halftime, throwing something in the locker room for being dressed down by John Lucas at halftime of that game against Denver because of their effort. Christian Wood not going back in the game either in the second half. Christian Wood didn't leave. But he did, he wouldn't enter the game in the second half. Roosh Williams is joining us here. He is at Roosh Williams on Twitter. He's host of the Noble and Roosh Show. And he is a big, big, big Rockets follower and actually an expert on what's going on with your Houston Rockets. Roosh, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be here.
I'm of the opinion these guys got to be suspended. You got to send a message that you can't do what they did. I'm of the opinion that Well, both of them. I think both of them. Christian Wood. There's been some talk about the possibility of trading him. I don't think Kevin Porter Jr. is good for Jalen Green going forward. Your thoughts on what happened and what the Rockets need to do here?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's just the kind of thing that you simply can't have, right? It's very, I think, immature behavior on both ends. Christian Wood, and they're two separate situations, so let's kind of run through them. Kevin Porter Jr., for whatever reason, I don't know, I guess he couldn't take the criticism that was being levied towards him and the team, and so he, you know, left the arena at halftime, which to me is kind of unheard of and just simply inappropriate. So you have to send a message and put your foot down that, you know, there is no clown show going on in this organization. And if you're going to act like that, then there will be consequences. Christian Wood apparently violated some kind of team rule, I think with respect to like a COVID testing window or a COVID window testing. And he was benched, which I think is pretty normal. But the disappointing part is his reaction to the benching. He came in kind of just half-assed it. He was minus 17 in 8 minutes off the bench. The Rockets were up 26-18 when he checked in, and then they, you know, Denver blew their brakes off as soon as he checked in. So there was no kind of coincidence. I mean, he pretty much looked like he kind of lollygagged it, unfortunately, and that affected the team. And then apparently it was Coach Silas's decision to bench him for the rest of the second half. But look, he's 26 years old. He's had these types of issues before. It's not a surprise. His character issues have kind of been the reason that he's been held back. It's not a matter of his talent. So it's really disappointing for Christian Wood to be displaying this behavior at that age, especially with the fact that he's got one more year left on his deal. So hopefully it doesn't hurt his trade value. With Kevin Porter Jr., I mean, this is the reason the Rockets were able to get him for essentially a second-round pick that will never convey, so basically for free. The good news is KPJ is only 21, but, I mean, you simply can't do this. You know, you can't turn your back on your team. I get, like, guys get heated at halftime, guys get mad, they want to win, you know, so on and so forth, but you really have to kind of monitor the way you handle these things, and if you don't, you only get so many chances in this league. I will say the good news for Kevin Porter Jr., at least as far as the Rockets are concerned, is that I think next season is the last season of his contract. So if he keeps this up, you know, if Houston wants to re-sign him.
Did we lose Roosh?
We lost Roosh. Roosh, we got some phone problems
here. Just put him on hold.
Let's make sure that we can
let's get another.
We can hear him.
Let's get another connection.
I don't know. Yeah, there are different situations with the contract, where their contracts are, but I don't know that it's much different. It was more than just you know, him pouting in the first half. He refused to play in the second half as well. So he basically did the same thing while he didn't leave the arena like KPJ did.
He might as well have. He mentally left the arena.
He wouldn't. Well, not mentally. He physically would not go in the basketball.
Well, game. I think the big concern you have to have here is that Steven Silas is basically, it's just, I don't want to say you're getting punked, that he's getting punked, but I mean, they are insubordinate without question. And you can't have that level of insubordination. And it's been something I've worried about with the young team. And Roosh is back with us right now. And Roosh, I think that's the big concern is that, you know, John Lucas is, and maybe it's a good cop, bad cop situation with Steven Silas and John Lucas, but ultimately the head coach has got to be respected, and you cannot be you cannot have players who are insubordinate, especially if you're a team that is looking to build something from the ground floor up.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the Rockets are trying to build a culture right now, and you know, you can't exceed too much to the players, right? The players can't feel like, hey, I'm a better player, Christian Wood. Maybe I'm the best player on the team or the best scorer on the team, so I can do what I want, you know? You can't throw tantrums. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you got 5 wins, doesn't matter if you got 20 wins. You have to play for your team and for your teammates, you know? And like you just said, the Rockets are trying to build something. Coach cannot be undermined like this, you know? And so they have to put their foot down. You know, if it was up to me, I'd probably suspend them each 3 games. I would not differentiate between the levels of what they did and who gets suspended more. I'd slap them both with, you know, maybe 3 games and pretty much send a message that, hey, this is it, and if this happens again, then we move on, and that's that. And hopefully, you know, I mean, it's the issue with Kevin Porter Jr. is the thing that scares me the most. I don't think Christian Wood is really in the Rockets' future plans just because of his contract length and the fact that I don't think you want to give Christian Wood a max contract. I don't know who will. Kevin Porter Jr. is still a project, but he's had these kinds of issues, man, and if they don't go away, then, you know, like I said earlier, you only get so many chances in this league. But the good news is that I don't think either of those guys are critical to the Rockets' future. They could be potential cherries on top. They could be potential, you know, projects that work out. But at the end of the day, you're hoping that Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün kind of blossom into the stars of the future, and then you add on the lotto picks that you get, you know, this upcoming draft and then the draft after that as well.
All right, I heard this leveled at you. Man, that Roosh guy, you'd think that Şengün is you'd think that he is the one of the top 10 players in the league, that he's the next Luka. How would you defend yourself against people who think you're a bona fide Şengün lover?
Well, I am. So am I defending the fact if I'm defending the fact that I think he's legit.
Yeah.
Look, he's 19. So first of all, he may not even be done.
People forget that, dude. He's 19.
What's up?
I said people forget that. The Rockets' two best young players are both 19.
They're 19. I don't put too much stock in like per 36 stats, which means the stats that you average per 36 minutes. So it's like an extrapolation of data. Sometimes it's legit, sometimes it's not. But that kid's numbers per 36 are mind-blowing. I mean, he gets 18 to 20 minutes a night. I think he gets 18 minutes a night. Well, he'll give you 9 points, 5 boards, a couple dimes, a steal, and a block. And if you extrapolate it up to like a full game of playing time, I mean, he'll give you 17, 9, like 5. I mean, the numbers are crazy. You can run offense through him. Literally, he just stands there with the ball, and as long as guys move and cut, you know, there are open baskets to be had. If he develops a three-point shot, the sky's the limit. I mean, just look at Jokic. I know that that's the typical example. Look at a guy like Jokic, like Domantas Sabonis. They put up crazy numbers. They have crazy IQ. And then if you couple that with Jalen Green, I mean, that's your future right there. We've only seen a few glimpses of it because Jalen Green's been hurt. And then when Jalen Green comes back, now Alperen Şengün is hurt. But once we get those guys working together, I mean, you're going to have superstar talent with Jalen Green. You're going to have star talent with Alperen Şengün. And then they got good building blocks behind that. Jayshon Tate, KJ Martin, Josh Christopher has had some nice flashes as well. Hopefully they get a top four, you know, lotto pick and can get someone like Paolo Banchero or whoever they decide to get, Jabari Smith. And then they'll be cooking with something. But look, don't sleep on Şengün. The guy is certified instant offense. He leads the league in foul rate. I mean, even more. He gets fouled at a higher rate than James Harden did in his prime in Houston. Take that for what it's worth.
What can you get for Christian Wood right now? Trade him with a year and a half left on his contract.
Year and a half left on his deal. Unfortunately, I think the best you're going to get for him is a mid-first rounder and maybe some type of, you know, young talent that could potentially turn into something. I'd be looking at probably Charlotte because Charlotte has need for a big like Christian Wood. So if they strike out on Miles Turner, then I think they could be looking for Christian Wood, maybe like a PJ Washington and a mid-first rounder. Or you could be looking at maybe Phoenix. I don't think Phoenix would be interested in him. However, there's the chance that Phoenix could take a flyer on him and get rid of Jalen Smith because they did not extend the qualifying offer to Jalen Smith. So maybe they slap a couple or maybe a late first-round pick, and then they give you Jalen Smith, who's been having an incredible stretch of 5 games. Something like that. Had he been traded last season, he might have been worth more, but if it's going to come down to, you're either going to be looking at a middling team, like I just said, like a Boston or a Charlotte that wants to take a chance on him and has a mid-first-round pick they can give you and some young player that you can either kind of work as a project or take a couple guys and then, you know, waive one of them. With Phoenix, it would be like Dario Saric, who's injured, who's got, I think, $8 million on his deal. And then you take that with maybe Jalen Smith, make the salaries match and waive one of them. Or it's going to be a bottoming team. That is really just kind of desperate for something, like your classic Sacramento Kings, you know? So maybe you get maybe like a Marvin Bagley and a pick from the Kings, something like that. But because of what's going on and because, you know, he's had these questions, I think it does hurt his trade value, unfortunately. But well, the good news is that the Rockets have a ton of picks in addition to that. So
see, I don't think I'm thinking more a team that thinks it can – it's a contender. You know, the Lakers.
Like who?
Like, well,
oh,
I know.
You
all, I know,
we could get Westbrook back.
Well, no.
Maybe pair him and John Wall?
No. No. Like the Knicks, like the Lakers, like the Bulls, like a team that thinks right now we got a 2-year window that we can, and I know that there's salary cap, all the implications and everything else, but I think it's more like that team, and I know you're not going to, you know, you're going to get their draft pick, but you know what? I'll take it. And last year you couldn't. You just signed him. but he was great for you, and then he got hurt. So yeah. Last year you couldn't
do it.
He's
on a very friendly deal.
A year
deal,
and a
though.
Half left? A year and a half left on his deal? It is a very friendly deal for the kind of production that you can get. What's hurting him right now, Roosh, I think, to any team taking him, is this attitude thing. I mean, it's got it's going to be a killer. It's going to be a killer.
Yeah. And so that's the thing with the contender, right? I've seen a lot of people, preseason, a lot of people thought, oh, man, he'd be great in Golden State. They need his. They need
yeah, but
big...
the, wait a minute. Now that, but, isn't that locker room going to be able to control him, much like the Patriots have been able to control problem children over the years?
You know, they could, and I think that's the best shot of it working is that. But for me, I would imagine that Golden State is going to take the route of, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? I mean, they're a contender right now. James Wiseman hasn't played. Klay Thompson hasn't played. So I don't know if they'd want to shake things up with a guy that's going to want his touches or potentially mope like we've seen him do with the Rockets. The other thing about Golden State is stylistically, they're at their best when they're running a bunch of wings, like a bunch of 6'7", 6'8", guys that can all tee up and shoot threes. And I just don't think that they need him. I like Christian Wood's game. He's a good player. I just don't think he actually makes Golden State better. Their specialty is when that ball's moving and Steph is running around and you don't know where that ball's going and all of a sudden there's open shots and they're nailing threes. With Christian Wood, you know, he's best at kind of ISOing, right, or running a pick and roll. And that's just not what Golden State really does. So I don't really see that working out. Like I said, it's going to be a team that's like, you know what, we don't care about these issues that we've heard about. We think we can make it work. And also, we need to make something work because what we've got right now is not working. I really think a deal between Houston and Boston with Eric Gordon and Christian Wood could be interesting if they were willing to cough up
Horford.
The right pieces.
You're going to have to eat Horford's contract probably.
Yes, and then maybe waive him, or yeah, I think he's got like a team option next season, so you just let that go. You know, so there's options. But yeah, like you said, you couldn't trade him last season. You just signed him, and he was the only player on the team that was, you know, any good at the time, and there was kind of some hope there. I think the most ideal time to have traded him would have been before the draft, and I don't know if Houston explored that or not, but I would imagine it was on their mind, and maybe the return just wasn't there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it will be interesting. Before we let you go, who's first to go, Kevin Porter Jr. or Christian Wood, in your estimation? And are either guy gone this year before the trade deadline?
I think it's Christian Wood, and I think it's before the trade deadline. I think they want to make it work with Kevin Porter Jr. And I think Kevin Porter Jr., you know, they're invested in him as a project, and I think he's also invested in the Rockets, whether or not, you know, he leaves the arena at halftime or not. But Christian Wood, simply because of his contract situation and because of, you know, what's going to happen if they don't trade him this season. So I think it's Christian Wood. I also think that trade offers for him will begin to heat up around February. I mean, right, you know, with the deadline. Right now there's all the COVID stuff. Teams are playing 10-day guys and all that and just hoping to make it through game to game. And they also may not really know exactly what they've got. So once their hands kind of get forced towards the deadline, I think that's when we'll see some talks heat up and we'll have a better idea of what's going to happen.
Roosh Williams, at Roosh Williams, and you can listen to the Noble and Roosh Show, where you find podcasts. Roosh, as always, man, good stuff. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Always glad to come on. Y'all have a good day.
All right. There's Roosh right here, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-37. You got thoughts on this Rockets thing? Let's go. 713-780-3776, or anything that you saw over this holiday season. If you're just joining the show, more than welcome to come in and give us your thoughts on anything, and there's plenty to talk about, anything that happened over this season. 713-780-3776.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I want to ask you a football question. When was the first time, I haven't seen it a lot, but when was the first time that you remember, that you can recall seeing a team let another team score a touchdown?
It's happened plenty.
I haven't seen it a lot. Personally,
well,
when I've watched.
You know what will happen sometimes is they'll let the team score the touchdowns and the team will sit down on the 1 yard line.
When? No, I've seen that once.
I've seen it more. Oh, no, yeah. I've seen it a few times.
When did you, well, that's why you got to make it look real. But when did you, the first time I saw it was a Super Bowl, right? Wasn't it like, was it not Falcons and was it, who did Elway beat in his last Super Bowl?
As a matter
I think
of,
it was that game.
He beat the Falcons and he beat the Packers.
That was, I think it was the Packer. There was a, the first time I ever saw it that I recall was a, Packers I think a Super Bowl game.
Second, I think, yeah.
I think it was a Super Bowl game where I saw it. I'm like, oh my gosh, they just let him score a touchdown. We've seen it more. It's not like something, a common occurrence that we see all the time. Cause it's a very, it's very specific instances where you would consider it. Yesterday, down near the goal line, the, well, it was inside the red zone. The Bengals and the Chiefs were playing. The Chiefs at that time had three timeouts and a 2 minute. It was over 2 minutes to go. And the Bengals were trying to go down and score a touchdown. There was plenty of time. I mean, they're inside the 10-yard line, the 11-yard line with over 2 minutes to go. So they get a run by Joe Mixon down to the close to the 1 yard line. And it's like third and goal from the one. And what I'm saying, and there was 2:10 to go, Kansas City takes a timeout. So now you have two timeouts. You have 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go, and you have the two-minute drill. Or maybe they had 2 minutes to go, and it was down to 2 minutes. No, this is what happened.
Here,
Cincinnati got
Joe
the
Mixon
first down.
Yep. Went down to the Kansas City one-yard line with 2:10 to play. Then we hit the two-minute warning. So it's fourth, and it, so it is...
don't go too far in advance. I want to go. They had a chance to get a first down. Instead of letting them score, Cincinnati actually got the first down inside the one.
Inside the one. That was the play. Joe Mixon got the first down inside the one.
Which is a nightmare scenario now, because now you're in. Now you lose your 2 minute warning, right? You lose that 2 minutes. That gets burned. And now you've got to let them score. So you still would have two timeouts and a minute 56 if they score, right? There was 2 minutes to go at the 1 yard line. Two timeouts for Kansas City. You let them score. So with the basically a minute 56, you would need 7 points, and you have two timeouts and almost 2 minutes to do it with Pat Mahomes. Instead, Kansas City decided to buck up, because that is old school. That's what you do, is you try to stop somebody from scoring. And Andy Reid was asked about it, and he was asked three different times, and they can't tell if he didn't really if he considered that option. If it was something he was thinking about at any point, or if he was dodging the question. But Cincinnati got stopped three times in short yardage, which was almost a blessing for them, because Kansas City had to burn up their timeouts. So with less than a minute to go, when 56 seconds, I think, instead of kicking a field goal, they go for a touchdown.
That was unbelievable.
And the analytics model actually showed if Kansas City, Edge Sports, showed that if Kansas City had allowed a touchdown with a minute 56 to go, with 2 minutes to go, their winning percentage, their chance of winning would have actually gone down, Cincinnati's 2.5%, if they had scored a touchdown with 2 minutes to go. Because now it opens up the field for Kansas City. Instead, Kansas City had a goal line stand, which was then bolstered on a fourth down, no less, by a pass interference where they got brand new first down, and they never let them score a touchdown.
So there's 50 seconds left.
Yeah.
Cincinnati is fourth and goal at the KC one. After that, Joe Mixon went and got that first down. Joe Burrow up the middle, no gain. They had Joe Mixon up the middle, no gain. They had
timeout. Two timeouts burned.
And then fourth and goal, and they are throwing the ball instead of kicking the field goal with 50 seconds left. Luckily, they got two penalties, offsetting penalties, and then they got another penalty. They did it again. I'm like, Cincinnati, what are you doing?
It was unbelievable.
Field goal.
It was the mismanagement by Kansas City and Cincinnati. Rarely will you see mismanagement from both teams. Both teams mismanage the clock so horribly and play calling so horribly. The bottom line is Kansas City has got to let them score and get the ball back.
Yeah.
That's what they got to do in that situation. But I feel like Andy Reid's almost too old school to even think about that.
Yeah, I don't think he's an analytics guy. I just don't. He's like, what? What does that mean, let him score? He would have probably been on the headset like Cully going, I didn't really understand what they were talking about when they said let him score. Never heard of that before. It's unbelievable. And everybody, we were sitting at Damaris watching it, and it was like, let them score. Okay. But once they didn't, Cincinnati throwing the football on fourth down with 50 seconds left was the most unbelievable play calling I think I've ever seen. It's gotten so out of hand on fourth down now.
Yeah.
So out of hand.
I think Tyler Oberle, who we had on, who was the analytics director for Tampa, what he told us is what he believes in, and he said there's plenty of analytics directors who do, is situational analytic decision making. Situational meaning, no, in this scenario, we're kicking a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
In certain situations, you can't just say, well, the numbers tell us this isn't a game of blackjack. You've got to make decisions that make sense. And what I'm finding is I think teams are really struggling when they're letting their analytics directors handle some of the in-game decision-making or the numbers. I don't think they're doing a very good job of balancing the numbers versus the situation. I really don't, because we're seeing too many really poor decisions that are taking place right now. That I understand what numbers may tell you, but based on just football IQ, you know these are bad decisions relative to the players trying to make the plays and the situations. They are not created equally.
No. All right, 713-780-3776. If you want to get in on this or anything else, you're more than welcome. You got thoughts on what's happened. 713-780-3776.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save